And that's where we are here on Eat to the Beat, heritageradionetwork.com, for a program that explores the relationships between the worlds of food, farming, music, art, and performance, etc., etc. I'm your host, Sarah Obritis, and we must thank Fairway Markets, the market of New York, and now Jersey. Really wonderful place to do all of your shopping, and they forage for us big time. We're a half an hour late, and I do apologize, but we walked into the studio, and there was a veritable love fest here, and then the show, which was pre-recorded, noticed my guest in tow and roped him in, which made them go another 15 minutes longer. But anywho, we are still Eat to the Beat, and my guest is still with us. I welcome Andrew Carmelini, a great New York chef whose home is now at La Conda Verde in Greenwich Hotel. He's the chef, he's the owner, he has a few interesting partners. This place is practically an extension of his awesome cookbook called Urban Italian, and he's here with us as I speak. Hello, Andrew.
What's up?
What's up? Yes, he is practically the golden child of the New York food and probably music scene, but I'm just learning about that. We're going to get to his other talents in a bit. But I'm going to propose a trajectory for Andrew. I'm going to build a sort of a ladder of keywords, sort of highlighting his career. You know, it's no news to the public. We all know this, but hopefully Andrew will point out what I'm missing or something extremely sort of poignant that may even be sort of under the radar. We'll start with his teenage years, and I'll move fast.
Teenage years.
Cleveland, Italian, CIA, New York, Mario Cuomo, Lespinaz. Smart wife, Gwen Hyman. Three star grandma, ravioli. Madison Square Park, which is a euphemism for you know what. Hotels, Robert De Niro. That was really fast and sort of cheap, but.
That was the 20 years went by in like 2 seconds.
Are you tired? No, but honestly, I mean, those, I practically took it from. A bio that I think you probably wrote for yourself. But anyway, a lot of us know about those key milestones in your life, and I'm hoping you can add a few. Perhaps you can hone in on something that resonates as we speak about those keywords, resonates as a fond memory that sort of catapulted you into a new personal sphere.
Well, it all starts in Cleveland, really, right?
Right.
I mean, the culinary capital of the world, Cleveland, Ohio.
Ba-dum-bum.
No, it's it's a good place to grow up, but I left in a hurry when I was 18, and I left because I was either going to go to Berklee School of Music or I was going to go to Culinary Institute of America, and I auditioned at Berklee. And, went through that calling process, and I went to CIA, and I just kind of like, I was cooking already, and I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna go the chef route, because I was working in restaurants when I was like 14, and I liked it because I liked the cooking part, but, I got like free booze, and
For the record, you could have gone either way.
I could have gone. It's not like I like was born
Berklee
into like,
wanted you.
Wanted, a chef from day one. No, I could have gone either way. I liked the cooking part. Yeah, I fell in love with the cooking, and I came to the East Coast, and in my mind I was gonna, back then early in 1990, it was if you came to New York you had five choices to work at if you were a cook. You're either going to work at like Le Cirque, La Caravelle, la, kind of like thing. Mm-hmm. And, so I did that for a couple of years.
Yeah, you nailed a couple of big, big names.
Big laws. And then,
including
Le Cirque. Yeah, including Le Cirque, Lespinasse. I started at San Domenico back when it, you know, in the day with Paul Bordellotta.
Andrew is not that old.
No,
I mean, all these names are, I mean, written right now in history books.
I came to New York when I was 19, though, so it was like been at it. And then I went to Europe for a couple of years. But I went to Europe, and I thought I was gonna like keep on going. I had this plan in my mind. It was like I was gonna, you know, go to Europe, and then I was gonna go to like Turkey, and then I was gonna go, you know, I'll make work in Istanbul, and then I would like go to India, because I didn't know, like, you just couldn't go to India and just start like cooking. And I would like go there and learn everything, and then I would go to like Southeast Asia and like go to Thailand, and like I would cook there, and then I would go to Japan, and someone would hire me and they would pay me, and then I would come back.
This is post CIA.
Yeah, and then I would come back to New York like this.
They really didn't teach you much, did they?
Long-haired culinary sage. Yeah, but school, like, you know, like I went to school when I was 18. I was like out of high school for like 2 months.
Would you recommend, if you were watching you, would you say yes, go to CIA, go to school?
Yeah, CIA was good for me because, you know, I was 18 years old and from Cleveland, and I didn't know shit really, you know, and I didn't know what sommelier was, and I didn't know you could go to France and work, and I didn't know. So it was like a good bridge kind of like thing to help me out. But if I grew up in, you know, in New York, and I was like working at a restaurant, and that restaurant happened to be like Danielle or like La Conda Verde, then, and I wanted to be like chef guy, maybe I wouldn't go to school, you mm-hmm. know? So it's like not 100% necessary. It's more about the person than it's mm-hmm. about like what school you went to or anything, that's for sure.
Well, totally. I mean, don't mean to beat a dead horse about like the age of technology, et cetera, and the age of information, but, you know, 15 years, and all these other sort of definitions like sommelier are pretty standard among kids or young adults who didn't go to school. So who knows if they needed that education, but you did it. And how did you find yourself at the doorstep of the some of New York's and really the world's greatest chefs, Daniel Boulud, Gray Kunz?
Danielle was a little bit later in life. I took the chef job at Cafe, so it was a little bit later. But like, you know, Gray Kunz, like in 1993, it was kind of like, it was the only place to work in New York if you like were serious. And like the line there back then was like Floyd Cardoz, who now has Tabla, and Scott Bryan, who's was at Veritas mm-hmm. for a long time, is not an apparary, and Rocco Desperado, you might have heard of him. He's nowhere right now. And you know, it was like this great, like young, kind of like very talented crew. So it was like the place to be.
It's funny, we're jumping around, and indeed, you know, your stint at Cafe Boulud.
I jump around a lot.
I'm sorry, you're bad patterned. You over, you know, 10 years later, you're at Cafe Boulud, and you had a superstar line behind you, supporting you, that sort of, and I'm just sort of thinking out loud or remembering out loud that you actually brought up or sort of like had the pleasure of working with these young kids who are now who you once were
in
the day. I could name like 5 or 6, 10 people that I work with in the meat business that were under your wing and had a whole lot of fun. They cried, but like they also had
crying is part of healing, really. So, you know, it's part of the process. I'm a lot more mellow now, though, than I was. Because, you know, when you take a chef job when you're like 27, you know, mm-hmm. especially like, at, you know, you're like the chef for like Daniel Boulud, it's like it's a lot of pressure, you know, and I used, you know, you get a little crazy, but I'm much more organized now.
Totally. And we're going to talk about what else Andrew is and what else he's up to after these few notes, which are actually Andrew's. Andrew is also known as the Crown, and he will describe what that is all about, but some fabulous music produced and created by AC.
Drama, drama. Drama. He hopped out with the llama, then he tried to get me. Pistol with me with the jewels or the records or that slick talking. Coffin bound to make me put you there. While I'm at it, run your designer wear. His eyes I stare crazy, look a real crook. I ain't shook, but homie look, I got no jewels. I'm making moves, but I don't wear my worth. My leather hair, hold that, go buy yourself a G-pack. That right there is 20 cents, listen, you can pay your rent. Buy some dope, get some food, get a crew, make a move. But you don't gotta prove that your tools lay fools. I know the rules, give it up fast or die slow. So now you know, all I got you got, you can let me go. He cut me loose before he did, he punched me in the kidney. But fuck it, this is NYC, they tried to get me. Drama, NYC, it's the street life, trife life, club scene, street fight. We caught up in drama, crack fiend, pop queen, all in the same scene. Drama, I see it, man, I live it anytime. You can lose your life, I'm pouring out some spirits. This is drama, NYC, yeah, we caught up in drama. NYC, yeah, we caught up in drama. Drama, 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 drama. My dude comes to get me, just cruising, homie, wanna roll a holler at chicks? Yeah, I'm with it, let's go. Before we go, it's gas low, I put half.
Hey, that's The Crown, called The Drama, a track off Andrew Carmellini's album, most recent album. He's our guest here on Eat to the Beat. And we just left off talking about Andrew's experience whirlwind at Cafe Blue in New York City. And during the break, I asked him about his the entourage that sort of makes up The Crown, even though Andrew is 99.9% of that crown. And so the lyricist came to you through the pastry kitchen somehow at Cafe Blue. Can you...
Josh Gripper grew up in Jamaica, Queens, and got into the food business and found his way into pastry, which is kind of weird because totally. He's a dude. I'm going to go ahead and say it. There's not a lot of guys that work in pastry.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, he's like
from an African... Jamaica,
he's
Queens.
He's an African-American guy that's in pastry. And he, you know, he came to us with not like a lot of experience at Cafe Blue. And he got hired by Remy, who was the pastry chef there. And he worked for us like 2 weeks. And then I was in Japan. We were doing some parties in Tokyo. And at like 4 o'clock in the morning... My phone rings in my at the hotel, and it's this kid who just started working for us, Josh Gripper, and he's like, "I'm gonna quit."
He feels the need to call you directly.
Somehow he could track me down in my hotel room.
He's so done.
So I'm like, I'm on the road, and the guy calls me, and it's like 4 o'clock. I'm like, dude, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. We just came from a strip club. I can't feel my toes. Fuck you. You're still working for us.
You're in.
And ever since then, we became, you know, really good friends.
Mono.
And he's actually a great, great pastry chef now. And he was a pastry chef at Avoce, and he was sous chef at Cafe Blue. And now he got kind of tired of the city, and he went down to Miami. He's the pastry chef at Gotham Steak.
Nice.
But besides that, he's a great rapper.
Mm-hmm. And so here I am. Wanting to ask, like, where did you guys find the time to get into the studio, et cetera, et cetera? But you started to tell me about the process of building each track and your albums. I mean, you have almost three complete albums.
Yeah, we have three albums together. I play all kind. I grew up, you know, I'm primarily a guitarist. I grew up, you know, I started playing guitar when I was six. I studied classical and jazz, and then when I was like 10, I discovered you could plug it in, and that was the end of that. And I like grew up with metal and rock and everything. And then, you know, when I moved to New York, I kind of really fell in love with hip hop and acid jazz, and like really, you know, went crazy and saw tons of shows and really got into the culture a lot. Mm-hmm. And I started producing, but just for fun, and kind of like I taught myself everything. Probably about 10 years ago.
What do you mean by that? The equipment or the
Yeah, just learning music, like because you know it's a little bit different than like, you know, jamming with a band, you know what I mean? So like I
alone a lot of the time.
Yeah, I build a studio in my apartment, and you know, we do some sample stuff, but a lot of stuff's played live. So we kind of do like, you know, more live track stuff than like samples off of records.
Yeah, you have live recordings
on
here.
It's so on, you know, on this all the instruments, I play everything. you know, all the keyboards, if there's guitar, I do all the bass, I do all the drum tracks. Sometimes I'll track the live drums in a studio and then transfer them back, and I produce all the vocals and everything. And I kind of just taught myself everything, just because having a band is a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or
totally.
Having, like, getting musicians together to do something when they don't get paid is a pain in the ass. There's always girlfriends and or just a lot of, like, you know, a lot of issues, and you know what I mean? Like, girlfriends have boyfriends, you know?
Well, it's kind of, I was going to ask you, you know, if you can point out the parallels between your cooking and your music making, but, and I'm sure there are some, but one distinction is that you have a serious team you lean on behind the line, and yet, you know, when you're by yourself, you really want to be by yourself making music and controlling that process.
But it's good for me, because when I go home, it's something I can do that I don't have to think about anything else. I put on the headphones and, you know, I'll record some nights till like 4 a.m, just like I'll record, you know, it's an apartment building, so you can't do too much, but we record, you know, I'll do all the drum track parts, the synth parts, you know, we record the bass direct, the guitars direct, whatever we're doing, but usually it's like pretty early in the morning.
I asked Andrew, I was like, you must have used a 4-track on that. He's like, try a 20-track, girl.
Four-track. I had a 4-track when I was like, I was like in 10th grade. I had like a,
and here I am hosting Eat to the Beat. Yikes.
Right now we can do, like, you know, it's because it's on a G5 now, you can do, it's like 128 tracks at a time, and I have like 7 synths at home, and it's amazing what you can do now. But
you're sitting next to a turntable, and so if I insisted that you came to our studio to make music live, what would you bring your instruments, or would you bring, I mean, how would you, just say hypothetically, you had to make music tonight.
If I had to do crown stuff, because I can do, I can play bluegrass, I can play thrash metal, I can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So,
but geez, the Renaissance,
but you know, that's a little bit difficult, because, you know, like the one track you just heard is literally probably like 20 some odd tracks. It's like kind of hard for me to do everything at the same time. So, mm-hmm. We'd have to track some of it. I could play one or two, you know, I could maybe play like the bass and like a synth track at the same time, maybe.
Well, I didn't mean to cut off too early, but it's a perfect segue to play one of my favorite songs. I don't even know the title, actually, but it's a beautiful guitar reminiscent of sort of Spanish guitar picking. And it's
Venga Key.
From one of Andrew's, or a.k.a. The Crown's early albums. So we will play that for a few seconds and come right back. Noche. So pretty, so awesome, and you'd never guess.
That's not me singing, though.
No.
That's Dawn Padmore.
It's not me singing either, everyone. That is The Crown, backed big time by Andrew Carmellini, who is the mastermind chef homebody behind La Conda Verde, downtown financial district, New York City.
You just call me a homebody?
I mean, homeboy.
Thank you. We're called a lot of things, but homebody is definitely not it.
holy cow, I meant you're there all the time, so you're a homebody at LV. So, but really, I meant homeboy. What's on your menu down at the LV, La Conda Verde?
Well, you know, it's like wintertime, you know, so a lot of pumpkins and root vegetables and stuff like that. But, you know, we have kind of like, they've become, we're only open like 10 months now, but I would call them like the La Conda Verde classics, which will probably never go off the menu regardless what's growing or not growing.
And that's because you know now that people are like,
yeah, they're just like the, yeah, they're just, you know, they're just the things that people just talk about and mm-hmm. they come back for them. Mm-hmm. And they're not so like tied to the season. So it's not something we're like
there's god awful duck meatballs.
No, duck meatballs died.
That used to be, I know we all know that.
We can do the lamb meatball things now. And those will never go off the menu. And the ricotta, we get the Sardinian sheet milk ricotta. That'll never go off the menu.
But when you opened, you didn't know this, obviously. Floated out.
Yeah.
And you're super sensitive.
They're just, you know, when we sell like 70 chickens a night because everyone's talking about it, then that's what we got, you know. At Cafe Blue, I used to change the menu all the time, like ridiculously all the time. We used to run. And, I got to learn that, like, people come back. Like normal people, not like crazy weird food people like us, but they like come back because they had this thing that they fell in love with and they want to have it again.
But how do you find how do you weed out those people from the people who read about like the chicken phenomenon that hit like in November last year or whatever, chicken. You know, all over? No, seriously. I mean, you chicken a million different ways, but usually fried or what, you know, I mean, you heard about this. And I always wondered how, when chefs knew when to say when, and when they knew it was like seriously authentic, that you had a following, that you had like passionate people who like relied on these dishes.
You know, a perfect example, you know, we used to do this pea ravioli thing, you know, uptown, and then springtime, you know, peas are amazing. We're using pea ravioli. It's great. We sell tons of it. And then people would show up in December and like, where's the pea ravioli? I hate here in April. Where's pea ravioli? And you try to tell them, well, no, now we're doing squash ravioli or we're doing like roasted whatever. You know, it's like.
So did you succumb
Cisco
fried peas?
Well, you know, yeah, we have the huge truck that pulls up in front of a restaurant every day and the Cisco forklift puts 1,000 pound of peas. No, it's like, but our chicken and the ricotta and, you know, meatball and the meatball thing, those, that's not seasonal, you know, that's, it's not really affected by, you know, there's not like a veg component mm-hmm. to it. So we have the seasonal changes in like other areas of the menu.
So what do you make of, did you ever think you'd fall into and I don't mean to be talking about all these like trends and patterns and everything, but you happen to be in a very beautiful, popular hotel, okay, and that happens to be a popular way of doing business these days with great restaurants at the foot of these awesome hotels. How do you feel about that, and how are you working out making people happy in their bedrooms and
in the hotel part? You know, it's funny because I've kind of always worked in hotel restaurants. Now, and I was thinking about this the other day. Like, Les Menas was in a hotel. Cafe Bleu is in a hotel.
Yeah, right.
What's the other one? Oh, yeah, Le Cirque was in a hotel. You know, so Voce was in a hotel.
Were all of those actually servicing the hotel?
Yeah,
they had separate kitchens for that?
Yeah,
and you were responsible for the menus and the staffing and everything?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Grand Chateau is a little bit different because it's only 80 rooms and it's pretty like high-powered. It's pretty expensive. For me, it's the most beautiful hotel in New York, hands down.
You stay there any night you want?
I can stay there. I think it's like 12 nights a year for free. Yes, in my contract.
So, like, if you're too tired to go to the East Side, can you like call your wife over from the East Side and say, "Meet me here"?
We have done that before. There's a really nice pool downstairs that no one uses.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's what I should have put pool in the trajectory of your career. Oh, wonderful.
So, because it's like, you know, because De Niro owns the hotel, so it gets this whole like Hollywood music thing going mm-hmm. on, and you know. The hotel side, you know, because I was traveling a lot last year. You know, when you go to a hotel, you know, what if you're getting room service, the thing you want to eat a really great burger. You want to eat a really good, like, variation on a couple sandwiches. You know, you want to get maybe, like, a good salad, and you want a bowl of chicken soup. You know, that's definitely what you want. If you get to some town at, like, 10 at night, you know, that's kind of what you want to eat.
Yeah,
you know?
But this is New York.
Let me tell you, there's a lot
of people come to traveled New York. Outside of New York and experienced this in other cities, but is that...
Is there something wrong with the good chicken soup?
No, that's fantastic. Okay. I'm pleasantly surprised, actually. Okay. What's your music list like at the restaurant?
You know, it's pretty varied. Lot, you know, some rock and roll, some hip hop, some, you know,
how do you
old
do
stuff.
Like a iPod? You can iPod, sort of make
yeah.
your own.
Yeah, we have a couple lists. We got everything from, like, I don't know, Hold Steady to White Stripes to, you know, Mos Def to, like, it's just.
Is there an hour when you turn up the volume? Like, is there, like, that formulaic, like, turn up the volume, dim the lights, and then, like, ultra, ultra dim lights, loud music at, like, the a.m. hours?
I would like to think we're that organized, but we're not.
No?
I mean, you can be having breakfast, and all of a sudden, you'll hear, like, X going, and why, girl? You know, it's like, for breakfast. So we're not that organized with mood-enhancing techniques.
But yeah, as long as you have the chicken soup, those Ohioans will forgive you. Do you have a following from Ohio? That do you have a
not
big?
No, not really. They're not really staying at the Greenwich Hotel. No.
Probably not. And so, okay, La Conda Verde. Now, how that's a classic terminology or phrase in another language, but how did you and your wonderful partner Robert De Niro land on such a sort of, I mean, for most people, including Ohioans, such a tongue twister? I mean, it's beautiful. I love it. We all know what it means, but, like, how was that, like, yes, that's it, let's go for it? What was that process like?
The process of naming is always a painful one for me, and because it's just it's just a painful one. And Bob had some ideas, and I was really hot on La Conda Verde after, like, the 700 names that we kind of, like, whittled it down to, just because La Conda is kind of, like, it's not, like, a popular name, La Conda, really.
No, it has viciousness.
Even in Italy, like, La Conda is, like, it's kind of like a country inn, mm-hmm. you know, with, like, a bar and, like, a couple places to eat. And we just happened to be, like, a little inn, and that was kind of my idea. Verde kind of just comes from, like, mm-hmm. we'll be, like, green market, and we have lots of plants around, so it just kind of has that kind of connotation.
But you really, are a diamond in a rough on that street, man.
But it really took a kind of a sit down with Bob, because there's two things he cared about, really, was the name, and he wanted to put some of his dad's art on the wall. And so he was really tied to, like, a couple names that I hated. I mean, I really hated
them. Can you disclose?
I cannot. I cannot, in all fairness, disclose what they were.
True.
But they...
Boy, that would have been fun.
Yeah, it would have been, but he's such a nice guy, so we can't do that. So I had to take a sit down and be like, no, this is what we're going to call it, and this is why, and because it's my food, and if you don't like it, tough. And so then it was La Conda Verde.
And this... La Conda Verde. Well, do you call it LV internally? Even that's, like, a little bit of, like, an awkward, like,
we'll say LV in emails. We'll say LV because it's a kind of a pain in the ass to
sometimes. But we'll speak it out here. So you were able to. So during this wonderful hiatus is so passé, but you had some time to make a beautiful cookbook and storybook practically called Urban Italian, and here you are kind of living it out, maybe not so much with the crazy stories, but definitely with a lot of the, you know, the style and the comfort and the lovingness of the cuisine. Would you agree?
Exactly that, what I, mean, I wanted happy? To do. Yeah, no, like Urban Italian and La Conda, kind of like a perfect match, like better than kind of my, we'll call it the old situation and my old kind of partners mm-hmm. before. So it's kind of the same vibe, you know, just homey. And
you should have called their place Peaches and Cream.
Peaches and Cream.
Okay, don't contemplate that.
Well, there's yeah, there's four stories there, but whatever.
No. Damn, it's probably somewhere in their lyrics. Well, maybe that's a segue to, usually I play my really awesome theme song by the beloved Debbie Harry, Blondie Z to the Beat, but tonight we must play a third track off of The Crown. Please tell us, how can a, I mean, do, would you ever play live? I mean, is this even like, do you even consider such a thing?
I've gotten asked many times to play live. Usually they're like food kind of events, you know, and like being
wah,
like
wah.
And being like musician guy, like I don't mix the two, you know what I mean?
Except so here on Eat to the Beat.
Except this is actually
thank
the
you.
First time we've actually done
it. It's not that corny
like that.
Though, is it?
It's not, because it's just bad and cheesy and would never work. Except for here.
Yeah, thank you.
So
okay.
But yeah, we would do it. It's just playing live, like, you know, it takes time, and it, you know, the album took me 2 years to put together, and then we had to practice. And
that's
like,
how long I waited.
You know, I'm lucky I got the same pair of socks on today.
So they'll never hear you live or see you in person, our listeners, because they are all over the world. But if they wanted to listen to your music, how do they go about doing that?
If I was organized, you could buy it online and stuff like that. But again, I'm not. So
okay, well, anyway, sure when that happens, andrewcarmelini.com will
maybe we'll sell some. You know, if you stop by Lakonda, I'll just give you a CD.
Oh, awesome. Yay. I love the perks on Eat to the Beat. Well, we're going to sign off with Sarah Obritis, which is on Heritage Radio Network, and I have had the pure pleasure of having Andrew Carmelini, aka awesome, amazing, lovable chef and really dynamite music maker. I mean, like a true Renaissance man. So thank you very much for coming east and north to Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we will sign off with a track called, I forget, all I know is it's number two.
It's called More Fire.
More Fire.
Yo, back again. Grips, AC, round two. Known to pop off, fly like Air Force, drop top the Porsche, muffler with a torch of leather, butter soft, the black Tony Danza, aka the boss. My life is a sport, I'm playing to win. My full jack move is a means to an end. So sick with the pen, increase the dividends, the reaper in the bends, make your face so grim. Don't hate my friend, I blow like the wind, break bread with my kin like a real kingpin. The flows, razor sharp my flaws, paper thin, pop bottles all night, the VIP's my den. Go. Me ballin', live wires, I know what you want, more fun.